go explain evolution to the monkeys.
God damn you all!
Welcome back to Cinema d'Amore. I am Justin Morgan. I'm here with
Chuck Phillips.
And we are in the middle of our Planet of the Apes saga. We're at the end of the classic Apes trilogies. We're at the end of the classic Apes films. It can't be a trilogy if there are five films. And we were talking about Battle for the Planet of the Apes, a film that actually was successful and made the producer, what's his name, J. Arthur?
Arthur P. Jacobs.
Yeah, when they started advertising this film, they advertised it as the final Apes movie. And the producer, this is it, this is the end of it. And it ended up being very successful at the box office, and he thought about possibly doing a sixth movie. But he decided against it because he wanted to do things other than Apes movies. And then he actually passed away maybe 3 weeks after this movie came out. So he ended his career on Apes movies, vowing not to do any more Apes movies.
Yeah, he had just sold the rights to the film to Fox just to do as a TV show, which they did a TV show following Battle for the Planet of the Apes. So yeah, that's one of those things of, was Apes the only thing keeping him alive at that point? Was he only alive for the Apes? And then as soon as he was like, nah, I'm done. And it was just like, I guess you're done with life then.
Well, it's very popular because in 1973, Battle for the Planet of the Apes came out. 1974 is when they did the television show. So that year they had a marathon where they did all five of them. And they had it was like the Go Ape marathon with the poster of like Ursus, or I'm not really sure which one's supposed to be on the front.
I think that's probably Aldo.
So they got him on the front. And apparently, like, a lot of these movie theaters hated the fact that they were showing five movies for the price of one. So that poster is actually pretty valuable if you do have it, if you can get your hands on it. Because apparently most places wouldn't even show all the Apes movies. So there's a lot of them where they would, like, X out the movies that they weren't showing. Like, I don't know what order you're like, not Beneath. Just Escape. They circle Escape.
They would probably just show the first one and be like, there, that's good enough. Get out of the theater.
Which is really funny now because they do a marathon such as all the Marvel movies and you're still paying $10 a movie. These theaters are like, hey, if people are going to be in our theater for a week straight, they can fucking afford $300 per person.
Yeah, it's cool the way that this series kind of ended with probably maybe the weakest entry, the fifth film, Battle, but then it just got super popular just from them, like how we said, like putting it into theaters and just trying to run these five movie marathons. And then I know they also did a toy line with what's those one, the Mego Mattel toys. Now there's little, the ones that they did for like Star Trek and a lot of those other ones, I think they're Migos, which they were trying to, a lot of people I saw were pointing out when they were talking about the memorabilia for Apes is, hey, they were doing toys and play sets before Star Wars was. You know, Star Wars gets all the credit for being the franchise that first, you know, figured out to do like tie-ins with, you know, games. And they showed a bow and arrow set that was like, you know, pretend like you're hunting like Planet of the Apes. And then someone was like, did they not realize the implication if you're hunting on the Planet of the Apes is that you would be the one hunting other humans? I don't think they thought that one through too well when they thought of that playset.
I mean, when you think about it, beyond the first two movies, starting with Escape and ignoring the remake, you are siding with the apes. I mean, when the revolution is happening in Conquest, I'm not rooting for the humans. I'm definitely rooting for the apes. I feel like most audiences are. It just has that dumb toy producer ideology that you were talking about there, which I watched. Was it For the Love of Toys or what was that thing that Netflix had?
Yeah, you had it right.
That television show, it's not the most exciting, but a lot of the stories do fall back on very old school presidents of these companies that will say dumb things like, well, do you really want to be hunting humans if you're a human? And as they learned with all these toy lines, He-Man and Transformers and stuff, kids could identify with anything. I mean, I identified with Ninja Turtles, so.
Which ape do you identify with in battle?
Caesar. Now, this is a couple years after Conquest. There's already been nuclear warfare. Because the budget is very, very low, we skipped over the nuclear warfare, and we went straight into apes trying to survive, live a life afterwards, and kind of live somewhat, not necessarily in harmony with humans. To an extent, they're trying to work with them as equals, but they don't trust them entirely. And Caesar is doing his best to appease both sides, where he doesn't want the humans to be slaves like the apes were, but he doesn't want the apes to like have PTSD, I guess, for living the lives that they've lived. I don't think that this movie introduces the character of Aldo, which clearly inspired Brad Pitt's character in Inglourious Basterds, where he's just all about killing and collecting scalps and stuff. But it's really funny. It's an interesting society where they're trying to teach them how to read and write and organize, because the human teacher that they have that's teaching them how to write is sort of saying, you know, Aldo, you can be a leader and only have military strategy, but you're not going to be a very good leader if that's all that you have. So he's not really that. If he is wary of Aldo's character, he doesn't show it so much. He's on his side. He's there to teach him. And this all kind of like blows up. Caesar's kid's stupid. I mean, like, he does like the little kid thing. They bring up the rule of ape doesn't kill ape. And he wrote ape doesn't kill Abe, which is the name of the teacher. And I think the teacher was like, oh, that's cute. But you fail, because that's not the assignment. I just asked you to write what I wrote. And they yell no. He yells no. And that's like a banned word. Humans aren't allowed to say the apes. It's a big...
Those snowflake apes getting all triggered. The word no is canceled.
They do get... Well, I think almost any species. Because think about it. Like, what do I say to the dogs when they're bad? That's what I say to them. So, like, that would definitely be a trigger word, I think, for an animal. See, that's, like, another thing where, if you think about the screenwriters that wrote this movie, they really did put a lot of thought into what elements that they could put into it. They know that they're, like, the last movie, they were pets. They literally considered them pets, and they took over for pets. And what's the one thing that you always say to pets when they're bad? Or they're doing what you don't want them to do.
Yeah. It plays really well of, you know, like how we said last time, you know, the scene of them saying no is very big. That's been brought up all the way back from Escape, because when they say, you know, what happened when the apes, you know, had their uprising, and Zira says, or Cornelia says, oh, it was when an ape said a word that had been said to him all the time of no, and then it carries into Conquest. So it is a good like through line. They interviewed it was a husband and wife team that wrote this film. And they talked about, apparently they had never seen any of the Planet of the Apes movies. So they said when they got hired, they were like, we got escorted into a theater and we watched all four Apes movies in a row in one sitting to learn everything we could about apes.
That's why it worked so well. They just took notes like, oh, the apes did this. They said they can't say no. And it found its way into the script. Yeah. They bring everything back in this one. Bring back the mutants.
They do a good job. They took over for the writer that had been working on the other sequels, because they said his health was just too poor that he couldn't work on this one. I guess they said he wrote a draft, but his version was a lot more. His version kind of carried more from the unrated cut, in that the apes kept being more savage. Like they kept they did turn the humans into slaves and were more, like, kind of even more violent than they were.
Hey, there are slaved humans in this. They're just treated better.
There's no slaved humans in this. What are you talking about?
Well, they're using the humans for, like, manual labor.
No, I think the humans do their own labor. They just coexist in the same place. I don't think they make them. There's no scene where it shows them, like, they have to work for the apes. They're Caesar's trying. That's the whole point. Is that in the original version, it was that they were going to be even like worse than they were in the first film in terms of like
I mean, you do have Aldo lifting the cart to help them change the wheel on the wagon.
Yeah, they more coexist. They're not slaves, but yeah, in the version that he had.
They coexist until they're all huddled into a cage with sharp
well, that's the gorillas.
Spears on them.
But in the original version, he was going to have, like, Caesar was actually going to, like, oversee. They would actually, like, perform operations on the humans to remove their vocal cords to make it so they couldn't talk. And that was supposed to be how it led into the first film, where none of the humans are capable of speech because they were actually like operated on so that they would lose their power of speech over time. And it was just a lot darker. So they did take these writers definitely took a lot more of the theatrical cut version of them being more working together than,
I mean, I think it works
than being that bad. And they kind of said their reasoning they said was that basically like if somebody were to, like, what would be more likely, I guess, that for a futuristic society of, if the slaves got their freedom, would they immediately just like turn and murder their captors and just like wipe them out entirely?
I mean, apparently there was nuclear warfare.
Yeah, well, that was the humans, though.
They wiped each other out.
Yeah, but not the apes. That's what I'm saying. If the slaves got freedom, would the slaves kill the masters immediately?
Probably.
I mean, realistically, yeah.
Realistically, in the apes movies, I don't know. But I do feel like with the gap of time and things that we haven't seen all the way through, like we don't know what Caesar has really done since his uprising and during this nuclear warfare, I feel that it makes sense that he's a wiser character now and he's trying to build this community. The only bad thing is, I think in this movie, the way that it plays, like, ape will not kill ape, it's just literally pulling a story out of Genesis from the Bible. You know what I mean? Like, it's just this weird story of morale that is, like, ape amongst ape, and maybe it's the last place that they have to go. Because you don't really, like, you have, like, the injustices in the first couple movies where, obviously, there's still a class system amongst the apes. And it really kind of makes sense in this movie, where Caesar's he's the leader of all the apes, essentially. And the gorillas just can't comprehend his thinking process. They just, they can't, they don't see any other way besides war. And maybe that's probably all Aldo knows, because we don't know what he went through during the nuclear war that we didn't see.
No, gorillas are just stupid.
He was stupid, but he did take great offense to being stupid, which almost makes me think of something more like Revenge of the Nerds, where the jocks were just like extremely offended by the fact that they weren't as savvy as the nerds were.
I like the addition of the character of Virgil, the orangutan. They have a good moment that's very subtle, the way they play it, of he reuses the same dialogue from Escape from the Planet of the Apes, but he's reusing the dialogue of the villain from that movie, where they ask him about when they go to seek out the records for Caesar's parents to like find out what the future actually is supposed to be like. And he starts describing, oh, the, you know, time's like a multi-lane highway, and if we change lanes without even knowing it, you know, we'll change the future course, which is the exact quote that character gives in Escape. So I did like that they kind of like flip that by having the ape have the exact same
very Doc
like,
Brown
like
of him.
Cause. Yeah. Like he has the exact same knowledge, which I guess it kind of shows like how far they've advanced, that they're on the same level as where the humans were all the way back then, of like the concept of time and things like that. So I thought that worked really well to have that character like kind of flip that role, that he has the smarts this time.
He's the exact character I was talking about on the last episode, where I felt that it suffered from the makeup, because there's this moment where he's talking and his mouth is not moving, and it's a good 40 seconds to a minute long a hold on his face as he's just, his eyes are very expressive, but his mouth is just like struggling to even open and close. Hey, we also get John Huston in this movie. He bookends the movie.
The lawgiver.
He's the lawgiver, which every time I watch this series, because the Blu-ray has this lawgiver
that crap, CGI lawgiver thing,
you're forced into listening to him give you ape Bible verses or whatever. And I'm trying to think, like, as you're watching the movie, you're like, I forget that it's John Huston until we get to the battle for the Planet of the Apes. I always think that it's just a character that they vaguely talk about in the first two movies, and then you never hear from him again. But he's telling the story of Battle for the Planet of the Apes. And I think that, I don't know if they did some sort of deal with him where he said, listen, I'll show up for one day. So you give me, if you, whatever we can get in one day, that's it.
This is like the, as close as they get to casting like a, like some sort of legendary actor, like how they wanted Orson Welles to play Ursus in Beneath the Planet of the Apes. So like, yeah, we got John Huston to play the lawgiver. So, you know, we got some good stuff there.
Hey, it took a little bit of time until we got something. The next one that we'll talk about, the remake, get a lot of people that are like, fuck yeah, I want to be an ape. Put me in that makeup.
Yeah. I feel like, I think where this movie suffers the most is honestly, and it's a problem that kind of, I don't want to say has been there the entire series, but some movies you kind of feel it more than others, is the more interesting part of the film is the ape society and them trying to build a society with the humans. There's that internal like fight with the apes or the gorillas specifically going on. And every time I feel like this movie loses momentum, it's as soon as it goes to the human characters in the city. Like none of them are interesting. When we get to the moment where they go to leave the city to go find the Hall of Records, which that's another great thing of they recast this movie and everyone just talks about how they're related to the people from the last movie, like the guy that's, oh, McDonald's my brother. And he just constantly references.
They wrote
like,
the role for McDonald, but then they got a different actor. They kept the name, and they're just like, brother.
Yeah, they still call him just McDonald anyway, though. But and then the guy that like rules the underground city is like referring to, well, my predecessor, like the old, and then that's how he relates everything. Who's the human? Why, that's McDonald, the brother of the assistant to my predecessor. And I'm just like, that was the most convoluted way to say you know that guy.
He could have just been a guy that mutated and what happened, like lived through this war and hates apes, you know what I mean? Like, you don't have to do anything. He doesn't have to be related to anybody. Yeah, in the last movie.
Exactly. And he's like, I don't know, all the human characters, even the ones at the ape city aren't really given that much to do other than the teacher and McDonald basically. And then when you get to these kind of already starting to mutate people, like they just vaguely have like small scars and like disfigurements from being around the radiation too much, but they're not at the level of Beneath yet. But yeah, none of them are interesting. Like the guy talks about just how isn't life so boring in this underground city? Like that's this whole thing.
You know how uninteresting they are? They're not even playing chess, they're playing checkers.
Yeah,
that's how boring. Boring these mutants are.
They can't even play a good game. Yeah, it's.
Well, there I do like the costumes with them because the costumes are more low key, but it really works well for them being like the very first of the mutated people. But beyond that, they really lose it. It's not very interesting at all after that. You know, they have a couple tanks and shit like that, and they go to fight the apes, but. I mean, it's the most boring part of the movie. They've got a school bus and a
station wagon.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, yeah, maybe go more Mad Max with it or something.
That was, again, like where you can really see the budget limitations hitting them when they're like, okay, roll out. And it's literally a school bus, a couple motorcycles, a station wagon. Yeah, he's in like a he's in a Jeep that's got like a mortar in the back of it or something like that.
And that it's would like, work better with Race with the Devil, like that movie that would fit in, but not this one so much.
Yeah, every time we go to those characters, I feel like is when this movie kind of starts slowing down. All the like you kind of already had. I guess this is just more like they wanted to set up the mutants to kind of tie everything back together, that this is, you know, we're finally reaching that point that, you know, don't forget there's still people under the city with a nuclear bomb. Like they wanted you to like remember that, but they feel very unnecessary to this because everything going on with the apes is more interesting.
I think it comes down to hindsight, because when we see the movie, they are the worst part of the movie. Should they have been included in the movie? Sure, why not? They could have just went into the city to get information and dealt with some mutants that were there. The end. You know that they're there. They threw in some stuff that would maybe work in today's world with the, you know, like the MCU post-credit scenes where like they have the Alpha Omega bomb and they're like, should we set this off?
No, it's a thing to be worshipped.
We know that this isn't going to happen for several more years. And I also had the feeling that this wasn't the same city. It wasn't New York City, but they apparently had the exact same bomb that is in New York City in beneath Planet of the Apes. But this movie, I think it has like this Cain and Abel kind of biblical vibe to it. It does suffer here and there. Like the death of Caesar's son is like, I like the idea that Aldo kills Caesar's son for overhearing something, but it's kind of done in such a dumb way or a way, I guess, that really shows how low this production was of cutting off the branch. And then you have fucking McDonald ripping down the branch like he's some forensic scientist and he's able to figure it all out. But when the revelation comes that he killed Caesar's son and they have this final battle up in the trees, on paper, it's another thing where I always say this, but on paper, it probably sounds pretty cool to have an ape fight in a tree between these two apes. But then when it's like, oh, they're people and they're not going to look that great moving around in this giant tree. Hey, but they stuck with it. They said, hey, we got the tree scene. Get up that tree.
Yeah, I do like there's another ape that I enjoy in this film. The orangutans really are really strong in this film, I guess. They finally get their moment again. I enjoy the guy that runs the armory.
Yeah.
He has a lot of great stuff. Like I like and I think it's interesting the way they play it out of like the way he says he's Caesar's conscience, like. So they keep the armory locked and he lives there. And like when Caesar comes up, hey, I need guns. Well, what would you need guns for? We're going into the city. Yeah, but you still haven't answered my question on why you would need guns.
That is definitely a ripoff of people renting camera equipment. It's like identical to, do you need that third camera? Yeah. When the orangutan's asking like,
yeah.
What do you need a handgun for? They're like, in case he wins the hunt. They're like,
do you need a third gun? Yeah. Yeah, I enjoy that character of the orangutan that runs the armory. He has a lot of great moments there. And when he's like, he tries to battle off Aldo later in the film to little success, but he has some good moments with him as well. And you know, he's the only voice of reason in the end that just says, you know what? You just need to blow the whole thing up and just get rid of the guns.
I want to say these are the best orangutan characters. I really like Zaius, but they do a pretty good job in this last movie of making you kind of have a better feel for each type of ape. I like Aldo in this. I like Caesar in this. And I like Virgil in the armory keeper. I do think there's like a really good diversity between the classes. Weirdly enough, in this movie where there's a lot of scenes that just kind of come off as boring, they are probably the better characters than a lot of the other movies. Maybe because they had to rely on the actors and they had to rely on these stories being somewhat interesting.
Yeah. Well, this is the film that's had the most like cast of ape characters since the first and the second one, I guess, technically, because once you get to the third one, you pretty much just have, it's just Cornelius and Zira. Milo gets killed early on. And then once you get to Conquest, Caesar's the only one that talks. Everyone else is just kind of a,
right. You'll get like a few that have a performance a silent performance, but the rest are just extras.
Yeah, this is like the first one since Beneath that we've actually had, like, you know, full actors doing ape characters. And I think a lot of them work. Yeah, I agree. I think the guy that plays Aldo is really good as like kind of the angry general. We don't like get a real sense for like what his age is supposed to be. Like he's in school to learn, I guess, but like, I'm not sure is he as old as Caesar is? I would assume he's younger because Caesar was the first talking ape and all the rest of the talking apes came after him. I would assume he's younger.
Radiation, but, man. I don't know.
Yeah.
I do like how they're going and when they go that moment where they're going through the city and they have the Geiger counter and they're like, oh, the radiation's going bad. We have to go quick. And I'm like, from watching Chernobyl, you're all dead. Get out of there. You're dead. It gets worse. The Geiger counter picks up like stronger radiation and they keep going. Caesar comes out. He's bald. He's dying from mutation. Yeah, in this movie, it does the thing of radiation really isn't all that bad. Mutation's okay. But yeah, Aldo, I had the feeling that they had a bunch of I didn't feel like he was a kid. Like, he was definitely older than Caesar's kid. But I just felt maybe they lacked education. Like, they couldn't get teachers very easily after the nuclear war. So they were doing their best to teach them. And he kind of has that mentality of, you know, I got around fine so far in my life. What could you possibly teach me now? But I like him better than Ursus even, because he kind of has this emotional core where he doesn't like to be the laughingstock of anything. And he really doesn't see eye to eye with Caesar, but it's not necessarily, it's not bland as violence is the only way to go. It's just that he's just not smart enough to even grasp what Caesar's trying to aim for. He does not understand his concept of society. He does not see how it works. And I think that's a better flaw. And I think he ends up being a more interesting character in the long run.
Yeah, I know why they put the human characters into it, but that there are so much better, there's better things going on in the Ape City that it just feels like you didn't need to even have the human characters, the ones in the nuclear city, like, or just have them like barely there. Like, I feel like it could have been kind of how you said, like a post-credits scene, almost kind of end thing of, you know, they go there, you find out that there's still humans living under, but then maybe they escape and go back to the Ape City and then the rest of the humans aren't there. But then at the end, like, there's that reveal of, oh, don't worry, we've got the bomb if we ever need it for anything, like, kind of thing.
Or have them like the sand people in Star Wars. They're just an obstacle and they're there, and that's enough that you know that what they're going to become in later films.
Yeah. Because like I said, everything's better at the Ape City. There's a lot of good stuff going on there. Yeah, McDonald's trying to, I guess, keep everything civil. He does kind of bring up to, like, kind of how, like you said earlier, like, oh, are they enslaved? But they don't really seem enslaved. But McDonald does kind of bring up to Caesar, like, that they're not really free either. Like, they basically couldn't exist on their own. They kind of have to stay and live in the Ape City with them, because if they went out and tried to live on their own, they'd probably, like, they couldn't collect their own, they don't have enough to collect their own supplies and things. So it's an interesting moment of, they're, like I said, they're technically not slaves, but they're also not really free to go and do their own things either. They're still kind of captive to the apes. They need them somewhat.
That's a better explanation that you gave right there, because McDonald is like the most highly reserved human being, and he's kind of Caesar's right-hand man. You don't really see much of anything going on with between Caesar and Lisa that well. Like, their relationship is not as good as Cornelius and Zira's in Escape. Like, I really felt that relationship was strong. But this movie does a good job juggling all the different characters and all different personalities, I think. Yeah, the mutated people, maybe there was too much of them, but I don't know. Somebody was like, we have the set. We can do people pretty easily. We don't even really have to make them bald. We'll just put these things on their heads.
I do like the end battle, though, and the way that he uses it in this film. He doesn't do it in, like, Conquest, but the way he uses ape tactics, I do like how that plays out with that final battle of them them going to the Ape City, and like there's all that, you know, they're shooting smoke bombs, they're shooting mortars, blowing up houses and firing their guns. And then when the smoke clears and they start rolling in and all the bodies are just all over the ground, and they're like, oh, look at this, we've won. And Caesar's the only one left. And he has that moment where he, you know, tells Caesar that he's gonna like make him a slave again or something like that. And then when he screams, fight like apes, and they all just jump up and immediately start like destroying everybody and like and attacking all of the mutant survivors. I do like that moment of you know, he's using ape tactics. It's kind of showing he isn't completely like the apes aren't completely the same as human. Like he has some interesting ideas at work there.
Well, the budget in this is really weird too, because they have a tank, they can make it fire. It looks like it's shooting. And then the pyrotechnics where they blew up that like treehouse of Caesar's, like that was a huge explosion. Like, I don't know. Maybe they find a pyrotechnics special effects person that was like, fuck it, I'll invest my own money into this explosion.
I'm thinking of, when you said that, it was making me think of Danny McBride's character from Tropic Thunder. Like, just a random guy that's like, I'll blow anything up you want. You just tell me what you want to blow up. I'll blow it up.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. Because they have, I mean, it's a good shot, and there's a good reaction to it when it blows up. But yeah, it's weird, because you have that. That was done pretty well. I don't think the death of Caesar's kid was the best. I mean, it's essentially the equivalent of the pilot of Game of Thrones, you know, where they push the kid out the window, which apparently it could have been very close to being the same exact moment. But like he lives on, and it's just more, I don't know. I don't think it really needs to be drawn out where they're like, oh, something happened to him. He fell from this tree. Why did he fall from the tree? And they're like, it looks like it was cut by a sword. And there's like only one character that has a sword. It's only
one character that runs around with a sword, Aldo.
I do like when the Virgil calls him out for essentially killing Caesar's kid, and he just decides to climb the tree. Like he just casually walks away and he starts climbing up this giant tree for their big battle. That's the battle for the Planet of the Apes. It's that tree fight.
Yeah, that's the real battle. Yeah, I don't know. I think, again, we've brought up a lot of the failings, I guess, of this movie, which some are story related, some are, I guess, just kind of budgetary related.
Of the good things,
there's, yeah, there's a lot of good things. I think it's helped that they had the director of this one. He's the same director for Conquest and this and Battle. Same guy that did Cape Fear. He did Guns of Navarone. Like they at least for most of these movies did find like none of the directors they picked are like the top, like high tier directors. I mean, I guess the first one, Franklin Schaffner, he at least is an Academy Award winning director. The with biggest Patton, like but, top,
yeah, probably the biggest top tier director is probably Tim Burton.
I mean, technically, well, at this point, yeah, Matt Reeves is more well known now. I guess I don't know if he's.
Probably from his Apes movies,
hey,
though.
He's doing Batman. We're getting his version of Batman. He's following in Tim Burton's footsteps now. He's got Apes. He's doing Batman. You know what's next? Is he going to do a new Alice Adam's in Wonderland? Family. Yeah, Adam's Family. Now who's making?
He's Edward Scissorhands.
Somebody's making Adam's Family now. I can't remember who's producing.
Netflix
that.
Is doing a show.
I know, I can't think of who's working on it. I saw the name of it earlier too. They were like this person's. Is it Tim? I think it actually might be Tim Burton's version.
He's producing.
I think
it,
he's producing
and
it. Yeah.
There's a girl cast this Wednesday. I feel like it's just called Wednesday, and it's their. I don't know. Who really cares? Tim Burton. I guess we'll get more into him during his movie. Not that I'm necessarily talking about his movie now. I don't hate his current films. I just wish that he did something more original, because like the last one that I thought that was pretty good was Big Eyes. And
I thought you were going with Big Fish there, but okay.
Big Fish is probably my last like favorite one, but among like Alice in Wonderland and Dumbo. And
why would you even
Dark
say
Shadows?
Like Big Fish is like the last one? Like, I mean, Big Eyes is still, it's not an adaptation, but it's a life story. So it's like, Big Fish is even the last one that I can think of is like a wholly original, like, you know, going back to like Edward Scissorhands level of like, it's not based very clearly off of any one specific thing that he's been doing a lot of lately, which is a lot of adaptations.
Yeah, that's the thing I'm disappointed with the most. And I like Big Eyes, but I love Big Fish. And there really hasn't been anything close to it. Like, I liked Dumbo, but I don't know. It's probably because it had a lot of Batman Returns vibes in that movie. But it feels like he just says yes to anything. Like, Tim, what movie do we have? Do you want to do Mary Poppins? Yeah, sure, I'll do Mary Poppins.
Yeah. And it's like, or it comes off as like, can Helena be in it? Sure. Yeah. And he's like, okay, I'm there then.
Johnny Depp.
No. And he's like, all right, we can leave Johnny Depp. We can drop Johnny Depp, but only if I get either Danny DeVito or Michael Keaton.
Yeah, his movies are still good. I think his choices are just a little disappointing. Because I did like Dumbo, but I the whole time it was coming out, I'm like, why? Come on, just do something else.
All right. Yeah, don't forget. We gotta now you're going to say all this stuff, and then we're going to get to the Tim Burton episode, and you're going to be like, I don't have anything to say about this film.
Next week, we get into the remake, and then on Tuesday, and on Friday, we'll do Rise, and then the following week, we'll finish it off with Dawn and War. But I have not watched the Tim Burton movie all the way through for probably 20 years, probably since it came out. I had caught a bit of it on television maybe within the last year and watched the first half hour of it. Like, I watched the whole thing with Mark Wahlberg landing on the planet and then pretty much didn't watch anything else after that. And I think when it came out, I watched it several times. So I'm interested to see what I think about that movie. I really am in the dark as to my own feelings that I feel towards that movie. I might be okay with it, hate it, love it. I have no idea. It's been so long since I watched it.
It'll be interesting.
But yeah, I'm really glad that we covered all these classic Planet of the Apes, and maybe if there's anything, any little extra information that we didn't mention, we can throw it in the last episode. Overall, I thought, you know, maybe this is a chaotic thing again, but I've always wanted to talk about the apes, and I feel like, you know, I don't really necessarily want to talk about just the new ones or just this original run, so fuck it. We're doing all of them.
Yeah, I've enjoyed this. Those are some of my favorite movies. I've always enjoyed watching them, and I really love that's what I'm, as much as I do like these original ones, I think the thing I've been most looking forward to is talking about the new ones, because I do really love all three of those films. Like, that's a really solid trilogy, and I think we'll get into why I think those work. I obviously, again, we're talking about our future episodes, but I think it'll be a good way to talk about why Tim Burton's version doesn't work and why those three, the modern trilogy, works a lot better, and getting into those reasons. I don't even think it's just like a oh, Tim Burton, you know, didn't do a good job directing. I think it's just a more of a concept idea and story ideas that made these new films work a lot better. But we'll get into that, and I'm looking forward to that.
Well said. I'm in the same boat. I love them. They're all good. All three of them are good. And as far as the remake goes, I did enjoy it a lot as a kid. It's just been a while. And I kind of feel like that was stupid, Justin, you know? My brain was not fully developed when I liked that movie. But anyways, the original saga, though, I think what's really nice about covering all of it is the themes and stuff that we talk about in this movie, and maybe the remake too, and all of these movies, they take the best parts out of them and they apply them to the new films. They have a new style, but they take all the old elements out. I think that's the most exciting part of those movies. The themes and the characters are wonderfully done. And that's what we'll be talking about starting in the end of the next week. So thank you for going through this ape journey with us and hopefully continuing it.
Thanks.
We're Cinema Demore. Thank you for listening to our Planet of the Apes episodes. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter to stay up to date with news and information on upcoming episodes. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podbean, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible, Pandora, Alexa, or iHeartRadio. It'd be greatly appreciated if you would subscribe to our podcast on your platform of choice. We also appreciate feedback, so rate us, review us, and let us know what you think. And above all else, thank you for listening.